Now we're joined by Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus. Mike, it's good to see you. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
You know, you usually see Steve Palazzolo and Sam Monson. Sam has been sequestered back in England, so he couldn't make it here. They will not let him back into the country, folks. So
I wouldn't either, but...
That's okay. So we got Mike joining us. He's going to pinch hit for us today. And, Mike, you do a ton of work for PFF on the draft, so I think you're a good guy to talk about here. And I think you guys look at these prospects probably a little bit differently than everybody else. Why don't you, before we get into the draft class, talk about your methodology, how you guys evaluate these guys, and what you're looking for.
So our biggest thing is the grades that we have on these guys, the grades that we've collected over the course of the season through watching, you know, every play that they've played this year. Basically measure their production. And so that's kind of a different thing than what scouts are looking at. Scouts are looking at traits, not necessarily how many sacks you put up, how many hits you had, you know, how many yards you had as a wide receiver. They're looking at, do you have the speed, do you have the burst, do you have this athleticism that translates supposedly to the NFL, whereas we're kind of starting from a different angle where it's, you have the production now, do you have the trait secondary that will translate to the NFL with that production? So that's kind of our angle and how we're looking at it, and that's why our draft board usually looks a lot different from the national media's draft board.
Here's a question. When you go back the last couple of years and you guys have done your draft boards, when all has been said and done, who are some of the guys that maybe you guys hit on and were like, wow, we really nailed this guy based on production, he was going to be really good, that maybe some of the national folks maybe were sleeping on a little bit?
Well, I think go back to the Super Bowl this year. We had Trey Flowers and Grady Jarrett as first-round picks. They ended up going in the fourth and fifth, respectively.
Wow.
We thought those guys were, you know, surefire just based on the production they had. Trey Flowers at Arkansas was dominating left tackles in the SEC, better than any other edge player in that class. And we just thought, you know, he might not have the juice off the ball, but he uses his hands so well, he's going to win at the NFL. And I think we've seen that with the Patriots. And then Grady Jarrett, he didn't look like a nose tackle in the NFL. He's only like 6 feet tall, 300 pounds, doesn't have the girth and the size that you usually see out of a nose tackle. But we saw him holding the point of attack at runs there at Clemson. We saw him getting pressure like no other nose tackle we saw in that class. And we just thought, you know, that's at some point going to translate, even if he doesn't fit the mold of an NFL defensive tackle. So I go back to those two as two guys I think we've hit on that others didn't.
All right, so now let's take a look at this draft class. Do you agree with the general consensus that it's an extremely deep class at corner? I'll give you four positions, two on each side. Corner, D-end, running back, tight end.
Completely agree. All four. I think D-end, this is the year to grab one. It is so amazingly deep. There are seven or eight guys in this class that would have gone ahead of everyone after about Joey Bosa last year in the class. There would have been, I think you could draft eight to nine guys in the first round in this and not, you know, not be unhappy with who you're getting. There are legitimately that sort of talent.
I want to follow up on that real quick. A guy like Emmanuel Ogba, I think it's a teammate. Do you think they traded up to get him at the front end of the second round? Or maybe the Browns just picked him because they had the pick. Yeah. Where would Ogba, who was the, you know, first or second pick in the second round last year, land if he was in the draft class this year?
He'd be around the 13th, 14th best guy.
So third or fourth round pick.
Was he third edge that came off the board last year?
Yes.
Yeah, 13th, 14th. And that's like, that's ridiculous. It's night and day. And I was saying, the guys that are seniors in this class have to be kicking themselves. Because last year they should have come out and you would have been, you know, you would have been a mid-first rounder. And now guys are going to get pushed down to the second round. But, yeah, it's incredibly deep. You can't go wrong with a number of guys in this class.
Who do you guys like specifically that jump out to you?
Well, I mean, obviously, Myles Garrett. And you can't dislike Myles Garrett just based on 3 years of incredible production and all the athletic tools. And one guy that I think we're higher on than the general public because of the production as well is Derek Barnett, the defensive end from Tennessee. We have him as a, you know, top 10 pick. I don't think he's going to end up going as a top 10 pick because of, like you said, like we've talked about, the athleticism concerns that they might have with him. He might not test amazingly here in Indianapolis this week. But his production was on par with Myles Garrett every single year. Same left tackles, same tackles in the SEC. He was beating them up. I really think he's going to be good in the NFL.
All right, so let's stick with some of these deep positions. How about corner? These corners coming out, and you guys do a great job of tracking whether or not they're playing zone or playing man. Mm-hmm. Are we getting a good mix of these corners coming out, or are we getting a lot of zone guys, a lot of man guys? What's the mix?
Well, I think it is a good mix. There are a lot of man guys right at the top of the draft. I think Marshon Lattimore is fantastic. He can basically do it. He's not really a man guy. He's a guy who can do it everything. And then you have some zone guys down in the second round, guys like Jordan Lewis, Desmond King, who have a little better feel for that sort of thing. So I think you're getting a good mix. Another guy I like is Marlon Humphrey, who plays very good in off-zone coverage. So I think there is a good mix for any team. You know, what your sort of philosophy is as a defensive coach, you're going to find a guy that you can like.
And I mentioned the corners. I'll stick with the defensive backs. Very rarely do you see two safeties projected to go in the first round. You saw a back, I believe, Earl Thomas and Berry, I think, in the same draft, went in the top 10. And a lot of people thinking that's going to happen this year with Jamal Adams and Malik Hooker. And a lot of people think this safety class is stacked.
Yes, I think both of those guys that you mentioned are incredibly talented. Malik Hooker makes plays from the deep middle of the field that we just haven't seen a guy since Earl Thomas, basically. He's making plays from the middle all the way to the far sideline, going over deep routes, making plays that just college safeties don't make. He takes a lot of chances, though. I'm a little worried about that. You see him get beat by double moves and that sort of thing. So he's got to clean up some of that stuff. But he has rare physical tools that you just don't see in safeties. And my favorite guy is Jamal Adams. The LSU safety is so incredibly talented. He plays with such great balance. I legitimately think he could play cornerback in the NFL. He has that sort of Jalen Ramsey type, you know, ability to go between both. I think he's, if I'm taking one guy, it's him, because he can basically do it all. Hooker's a little more limited to just basically that center field role.
And the way the NFL is now, if you can move that safety down into the slot when teams are changing personnel and you don't have to move guys around, that gives you an advantage right off the bat.
Yeah, safety is a Swiss Army knife for a lot of defensive coordinators in the NFL right now. I know the Giants like to use, they play a lot of cover four and a lot of cover six using Landon Collins in that sort of role. So they don't really need a safety at this time, but yeah, like that's the future of the NFL and safety position, I think.
Let's switch to the other side of the ball where it's deep. Tight end position. That's a position the Giants will likely be taking a very deep look at. I've talked to a couple different people now that they believe that O.J. Howard and Njoku might be top 20 picks. It might be gone by the time the Giants pick at 23. Do you think that's possible? And if so, where do you think that next level of tight ends come in terms of round and value?
Yeah, I think that definitely is possible. Both those guys are probably the most dynamic tight ends we've seen in a good while. Njoku is going to run some ridiculous numbers this week. The first time I ended up watching him, I thought he was a wide receiver there at Miami. I was like, oh, that's a nice slot receiver. No, that's a tight end.
And they played him about 75% of the time in the slot, too.
And that's the thing. So I'm not sure he's the guy who's going to line up and block, but that's not what tight ends are asked to do much in the NFL anymore. But O.J. Howard, though, much more complete player. He can block. He can do it all in that regard. I have a little more questions with him about his receiving ability and what he can do after the catch. But he's a guy, if you're actually going to ask your tight end to block in line, you're going to like him. So I think they could be off the board. I don't think they end up will being off the board when it's all said and done in the draft, just because there's so many other deep positions. That tight end is just not really a huge, you know, it's not a hugely important position in the NFL. That it's great if you have a dynamic one, but not a lot of teams utilize it enough. So I think that they'll be one of those guys there. The second tier of guys like Evan Engram, Gerald Everett, Bucky Hodges, tight end from Virginia Tech, I think those guys are all second-round mix. I think they could be there when the Giants, you know, go back around in the second round. So if one of those guys isn't there, I wouldn't reach for them in the first round. I don't think those are guys first-round talent, but they're all pretty athletic. They all have some sort of catching, you know, after-the-catch ability in their own right.
You mentioned Howard being a good two-way guy that can block and catch. Who else from this class do you like that can do a little bit of both? And I realize they're rare these days. Colleges don't ask these guys to block anymore.
That's the thing. All that second group of guys, maybe Bucky Hodges of Virginia Tech, but that's the only one. The other two are basically just weapons only. They're undersized guys who are receiving threats only.
All right, how about the running back class? I think we might get three, heck, who knows, maybe four guys go in the first round of this draft. Where do you stand, first of all, on the Fournette-Dalvin Cook argument? I know some people that still swear by Leonard Fournette. His size, I wonder about his ability to run through guys at the pro level. Some people like Cook better. Some people still think Fournette's going to be, you know, the next second coming of the next great running back. What's your take on those two guys at the top?
It's not even close to me, and it's Dalvin Cook.
I happen to agree with you.
Yeah, and it's not even close to me, just because Fournette's so limited in what he can do. He's so limited in his scope. He has to be in a certain scheme doing certain things, and then he can probably excel at them. But it's not necessarily – he's not a guy who can do it all. He's not a guy who's going to catch out of the backfield. He's not a guy who linebackers are going to worry about if you split him wide, because he just doesn't have that type of lateral agility, that sort of stuff. Dalvin Cook can basically do it all, and he's a home run threat anywhere on the field. If he's there when the Giants are picking, you're turning that card in immediately, just because of how dynamic a running back he is. I don't think he'll be there, but if he is, that's ridiculous. the guys after that, Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, I'd put Joe Mixon in that mix, but he's not going to obviously get drafted that highly. Those are all guys who, if they're there in the second round, yeah, I'd be completely happy turning that card in, but they're kind of late first, early second round mix for me. They can do a lot, but they're not the dynamic running threats that I think Fournette and Cook are.
We're joined by Mike Renner, Pro Football Focus, and I'll give you guys a plug here, because going into last year's draft, you guys made the point that Paul Perkins was the most elusive guy coming out of college. He had the most miss rate. And I got to be honest, I watched the tape of him his full five final games for the Giants when he got a lot of carries. Mm-hmm. He free runners at him, making a miss. Cuts in the hole, baiting guys to go inside. He breaks it outside the tackle. I think he's going to be an excellent pro back. But if the Giants do want to compliment him with maybe a guy that's a little bit bigger, with a little bit more power. Who do you like from this draft class that might fill in that category?
Guy who's a little bigger, more power. I'll go later in the draft. I think someone like Elijah Hood is more of a power back, the North Carolina product. He was banged up this year, didn't look nearly as good as he did as a sophomore, but he had the most yards per contact per carry season ago in 2015. He's, like you said, a legitimate power back. He runs through arm tackles at will. Doesn't have that elite top-level speed, but I think he'd work in the kind of power sort of man system that the Giants run a lot of.
How about the Foreman kid, and how about P. Ryan, the kid out of Oklahoma?
So I'm very down on P. Ryan. I just don't,
why is that?
I just don't think he has the tackle-breaking ability that will translate to the NFL.
Okay.
He doesn't have the sort of wiggle agility that's – he can maybe break some arm tackles, but I just saw him go down on first contact far too often. Our numbers, just his missed tackle numbers aren't great for us. I know he broke that record against Kansas as a freshman, but that was one of the ugliest defensive performances I've ever seen in Kansas. They had safeties running all over the place. It was ugly. I just don't think he's a guy who's going to push the pile. I just don't really see it. Deontay Foreman, on the other hand, as a power back, he's not amazing. He's not amazingly physical. He's more of a guy who has that sort of elusiveness, who sort of like a LeGarrette Blount in my mind, who's going to kind of shake a little bit in the hole, get through an arm tackle. So if it's between those two, in my mind, I'd go Foreman.
All right, now I'm going to focus on Giants here and do a little combo free agency draft. Giants need an offensive tackle.
Yes.
Look, whether it's to compete with Ereck Flowers or play the right side, move Bobby Hart inside, whatever you want to do, they want to add a tackle here for some competition at some point this offseason. What's their best route? Is it the draft? Is it making sure you get one of these veterans in free agency? How do you view the overall offseason combined in totality for offensive tackles?
If they could grab Ricky Wagner in free agency, that would be the ideal scenario.
You think he can play left?
I mean, I think he could. I don't think there's a huge difference. I'm not sure I'd switch him because of how good he is at right tackle and how, Ereck Flowers has 2 years now at left tackle. If you flip him over to the right side, you're going to screw him up even more. He's just going to get worse probably in my mind. So I think that would be the ideal scenario. Ricky Wagner comes in at right. You kick Bobby Hart into right guard. That would be ideal. But Ricky Wagner, there's only one legitimate offensive tackle on the free agency market that's going to start for you right away. So his price is going to go sky high. I'm not sure the Giants are going to want to invest that much at the position. So in the draft, guys I like at tackle, I think our number one tackle on the board is Ryan Ramczyk, the left tackle from Wisconsin. If they can grab him at 23, I'd be happy with that because he only 1 year of starting in college, came from a D3 school, has incredible movement skills, but he's still raw. He's still developing a lot. He has that kind of, potential where if he keeps developing at the rate he has been, he's going to go, he's going to be extremely good in the NFL. So those two guys, in my opinion, would be, if they got one of those, you'd be happy as a Giants fan.
What's your take on Riley Reiff?
Riley Reiff is just, so one, he gets helped out by the scheme in Detroit. They run one of the quickest passing offenses, although the Giants do as well in the NFL. And two, he graded out around average as a pass. I mean, that's an upgrade, I guess, average for the Giants, but it's not necessarily a guy who you're going to want to pay the price tag of a former first-round pick. He's going to end up getting a contract that he's probably not going to live up to just because of that sort of thing. So I could see the Giants reaching out to go sign him, but I would go other routes.
And now you guys do think, and we'll see if he ends up leaving Cincinnati or not, but you guys did have Andre Whitworth as one of the best pass-blocking left tackles in the league, right?
Yes, he is. I mean, he is the best tackle on the market, but the thing is, I just don't see Cincinnati letting go of him at the
I agree
moment.
With you.
So, yeah.
And he's a guy that's played there his whole career. He probably wants to end his career there, and we'll see how that works out. Jonathan Hankins, what do you think his market's going to look like when free agency starts next week?
So he really had a down year. This is probably his worst year in the past three, which is surprising. Going into a contract year, I thought he would step up his game. Didn't really have a great season, but I still think he's put enough on tape in the past that he'll probably get dollar range is tough, $8 million range. I'm not exactly sure where defensive tackle market ends up, but you'd be happy to have him back, but I just can't see the Giants after Olivier Vernon, JPP, Damon Harrison's contract. There's almost no chance you end up investing that much in your defensive line.
So let's say, in theory, Hankins walks away. The Giants in need of a three-technique defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. Do you see somebody on the roster that can step up and do that, Robert Thomas, Jay Bromley, or do you think they're going to have to look outside the organization to bring somebody in?
I think there's a lot of good three-techs in the mid-rounds of this draft.
Okay.
I think second, third, guys like Dalvin Tomlinson, Tansel Smart. There's going to be some talent there that could probably step in and produce right away. They could fit in right away. May not be high-level stars right away, but you have three guys surrounding them that are high-level starters. So you don't need incredible production. I would try to build through the draft at that position.
Who are some of the guys you love in the free agent market that you think will be undervalued and a team can bring in and they can do some real damage?
Undervalued? Oh, putting me on the spot.
Yeah, because I think 2 years ago you guys nailed Jabal Sherrod. Yep. You guys thought he was going to be really good. Mm-hmm. I think he got like 2 for 12 or something like that from the Patriots, 2 for 10, and I thought he was a great contributor for that.
I'm trying to think. Someone who might be undervalued. Maybe Adam Thielen, the wide receiver for the Vikings. I think he came
on
very strong at the end of the year. Not going to have – just the market for him might not be huge because of what he has, you know, 1 year on tape and came from where he came from. Not a freakishly athletic guy, but he's so good at the catch point. Got open a lot there for the Vikings. They just had some issues with that offensive line that they couldn't get him the ball downfield. So he might be a guy. I'm trying to think of some other guys off the top of my head.
Or even the undervalued. Why don't you give me some of the top guys in the class that you guys really do like, besides the guys we've already mentioned?
Top guys in the class. So all of them got tagged, it seemed like. Chandler Jones got tagged. Jermaine Johnson got tagged. All these guys ended up getting tagged. After that, like I mentioned, Whitworth.
You like Alshon Jeffrey?
Alshon Jeffrey I do like. I think there's some risk there with already getting popped for the one suspension and, you know, the injury a season ago. But he is hands down the best receiver on the market. I actually kind of like Terrell Pryor as a – if you're talking about value, what each is going to get paid and what you might get out of them, I'd probably lean to the prior side in that that kind of comparison. I think he's just that sort of athlete is you just can't find every day. A guy who's 6'5", 230, running 4'4", 40. He's freakishly good and just scratching the surface at this point. So, yeah, I'd be high on him. There's some safeties. Who was the safety? Duron Harmon is the one guy who I was trying to
from New England. Excellent in coverage.
New England. He's fantastic as a single high safety. Yeah. That's the role he played for them, basically. And it's hard to find single high safeties who can make plays, you know, not just right in front of them. So he's a guy who's probably – the market for him might not be huge because he's only played about 500 to 600 snaps each of the last three seasons. But every time he's played him, he's been, you know, one of the better safeties in the league. So I think he's a guy who could be kind of a steal on the market.
All right, Mike, final question. I know it's early. I know I will give you the chance to change your answer later.
Okay.
23 for the Giants. Give me a name. What do you got?
Ooh, I think ideal scenario would be – I'll go Ryan Ramczyk, the tack from Wisconsin. I think would be ideal just because of how awful that offensive line was last year and how much of a need that position is. I think he could step in and has that sort of high-level potential where he could step in and be good right away and then be even better in the future. So I think that's ideal. I'm not sure Dalvin Cook would be there. It's 1A, 1B with those two guys. If Dalvin Cook's there, you hand in that guard because I think he's the best running back I've seen in a while.
You mentioned Ramczyk. I just want to go a little bit more in depth on him.
Okay.
You mentioned only 1 year. He came from, I think, Stevens Point, if I'm not mistaken, the Division III school, something like that in Wisconsin. When you look at him on tape and you, let's say, put him into the offensive tackle class from either last year or the year before, is he still a first-round pick or is he landing in the first round this year just because it's a weak class?
No, I think he's definitely a first-round pick. There are definitely question marks. I mean, he's raw with his hands. His first punch loses a lot. He doesn't explode through contact at the second level. He's not that kind of physicality guy who's going to, you know, finish a block with a guy on the ground. He doesn't seem to have that sort of mean, nasty streak in him. But the offensive tackle in the NFL is a pass-protecting position. He has all the tools necessary to be an elite pass protector in the NFL. So those guys get drafted in the first round year after year. I think he's a first rounder no matter what year you're in.
How about Garrett Bowles? A similar guy without a ton of tape on him. Came from a small school. He's a little bit older.
So Garrett Bowles, in our grading system, was not a good pass protector. He got beaten a lot there.
Really?
Utah, which
interesting.
Is concerning considering he's already going to be 25, I think, by the start of next season.
You got it.
The guy's already, you know, that old. Doesn't have the pass protection on tape at Utah. Doesn't have the sort of, you know, consistent production. Got beaten a lot. So I would worry about him in the first round. I like the trade. He's a lot nastier than Ramczyk. He's a lot better run blocker at the moment. So I just don't think first round is far too rich for him.
And finally, Cam Robinson. I know some people see him as more of a right tackle. And one player comp I've actually seen for him is Ereck Flowers.
Yes, that's actually a pretty fair comp considering what Flowers has done in the NFL. I think Cam Robinson's so raw right now in terms of what he does in pass protection. He has some reps that are beautiful, but it seems to lose concentration very easily there at left tackle at Alabama. They didn't run also a ton this year of pure pass blocking snaps. They were run heavy. They had a ton of – when they did run pass, it was a lot of screens, a lot of jet sweeps, that sort of thing. So he doesn't have much in the way of, you know, pass protection pedigree there. So I would be concerned about him in the first round. There's just too many question marks for me to get on board with an offensive tackle. From what we've seen of the offensive tackle sort of learning curve, there's just not a lot of guys come in and are successful right away. It takes 3 to 4 years, and he's a guy who I think it'll take him 3 to 4 years before he ever gets there, if he does.
And that's a theme I think we're seeing in the NFL with the way the colleges are using offensive linemen. This is going to become a position scarcity situation in the league pretty quick. The teams tend to re-sign their offensive line. They'll limit free agency. And then the draft classes are going to be tough trying to project guys based on what they do in college. I think these offensive linemen are going to become highly in demand over the next couple of years.
No, I completely agree. And the thing is, it's both sides. We see all the pure pass rushers in the NFL right now moving to the left side because that's where the people are putting their bad tackles.
Von Miller.
Yeah, we see. And so I think both tackles are going to start getting valued. The contracts right now were so weighted to the left side, but we're going to see after the Lane Johnson deal a season ago, we're going to see a lot more right tackles getting paid. Ricky Wagner this offseason is probably going to get paid. It's a very valuable position right now. You can skirt around it to some degree with a quick passing game, but it's still going to kill you when you're in those, you know, two-minute drill situations when the other team knows you have to pass. Yeah, it's going to start being a premium position. We're going to see contracts go a lot higher.
Mike, awesome stuff, my man.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.